Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, 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 and a very warm welcome into RNIB Tech Talk, our weekly opportunity to come together as blind and partially sighted people and explore the world of technology. Of course, you can catch Tech Talk every Tuesday at 1 right here on RNIB Connect Radio. Or if you're not around then, how about Thursdays at 9 p.m. or Saturday tea time at 5 p.m. If you prefer a podcast, well, that drops each Friday from your podcast provider of choice. Just ask for RNIB Tech Talk. We're always keen to hear from you here on the programme. Voice notes, emails, very welcome. It's the usual email address, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Coming up this week, we'll be talking about Soundscape as Callum speaks to the Scottish Tech Army, who recently resurrected the popular navigation app. Hubert will be along with more of his Windows narrator tips. And yes, we've managed to get our hands on one of the new iPhones. Much more about that later. But welcome in to three co-hosts this week. Welcome back to Tasneem Arshad, who is also joined by Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Wow, it's crowded in here, folks.
It's a full house this week.
Indeed, indeed. Tasneem, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Yes, it's good to be back, and I haven't been around for a while, but yeah, very happy to be back. So yes, I'm around now, so that's good.
Callum Stoneman, you all right?
Yeah, doing good. Just been, I think we're going to have a bit of an Apple theme to this show, unintentionally, but yeah, I'm good. I've been playing around with some of the iOS 17 and the WatchOS 10 features. It's pretty good.
Okay, well, I'll be asking you about that in a second. And Hubert Pavalkovich, welcome back from you've been on your hollybobs.
Yes, I've been now in Virginia, out in the States, and got back into the country. So yeah, excellent. Glad to be back.
Well, they've let you back in, so that's good news. Excellent. Right, well, let's come round each of you then. I'm interested to hear from a sort of an accessibility perspective, what's grabbing your attention in terms of all of those announcements that we've had from Apple this month. iOS 17 now, of course, is out. Last week, the iPhone 15 became available. Tasneem Arshad, is this something that's been on your radar?
A little bit, I guess. Yeah, I mean, I'm still on the previous version, 16 point whatever it is. So as you know, Dave, I like to sort of wait around until, you know, the sort of new version's been embedded for a while before I upgrade. And having a look around, I think that reading about the bugs and things, it's kind of just confirmed my decision, wait a while until there's a little bit more kind of solutions for that until I upgrade.
Yeah, it's good advice, actually, on your primary device that you really rely on every day. It's always a good idea to wait and see and just hear how the early adopters are getting on. And if there are issues, then maybe they'll be shaken out in the fullness of time. Callum Stoneman, what do you think we can look forward to in a sort of an accessibility context?
Well, I think if you've got the LiDAR phones, I think the point and speak is... it's not amazing. I wouldn't rush out and buy a Pro phone for that just at the minute, but it's a good start, definitely. We've got some new voices for voiceover, some new more natural Siri voices. I've been playing around with them. They're actually quite nice, and they actually do quite well at a good high speech rate as well, which tends to be the problem with some of these Siri voices. I find they're really good, really nice sounding, but once you speed them up past maybe 60, 70%, it tends to just go a bit choppy. It just kind of loses something. It's kind of hard to describe. Have you guys seen these new per voice settings as well? There's all sorts of options you can change, and I don't know what half of them mean. But if you go into, say, Eloquence is probably the best example. If you go to the Eloquence settings, and I think if you swipe, I think you use the actions rotor. So if you swipe down on one of the voices, so like Eddie or Reed or whatever, it says open per voice settings. And you can change things like, there's obviously your usual options, you know, speed and pitch, but then there's like head size and sentence pause and roughness, and there's all sorts. I don't have a clue what they mean, but if you like customizing your voice, if you want Eloquence to have a bigger head, then you can do that. So made it a lot more customizable, I think.
Yeah. So all those software features available in iOS 17.
17. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything on WatchOS 10 grabbing your attention, Callum?
Well, there's a few new voices for WatchOS 10 as well. You can now get Eloquence on your Apple Watch if you want to. I'm quite liking these widgets as well. So I didn't have the watch when Glances were a thing, but I think this is kind of like Glances coming back. So you can set up widgets. So as well as the complications on your watch face, which will give you pretty much anything you want, really, you know, weather conditions or timers or, you know, your activity rings, you can have them as widgets as well. So you could have quite a small, quite a simple, well, in fact, quite a large watch face, if you like, you know, that just shows you the time in like a huge, you know, easy to see way if you've got low vision. But then instead of worrying about having all this info quickly available and having these complications, you can just swipe up. So the way you used to access the control center, you can swipe up and it will bring up these widgets that you can customize. So you can have things like weather, you can have shortcuts to apps, you can have some things that will be kind of context sensitive and time sensitive. So for example, if you have maps as a widget, then, you know, first thing in the morning when you pull it up, it might show how the traffic to work is looking. If it knows that you kind of exercise, maybe at the end of the day, towards the end of the day, it will, when you pull it up, it will show your exercise rings and give you shortcuts to start a workout. So it's quite nice.
Mm. And that stuff, of course, is going to benefit everyone, not just blind, partially sighted people, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Hubert, let's come to you and talk a little bit about some of the new hardware that's now available. Implications in terms of accessibility, as far as you're concerned?
I mean, the one big one for me is the action button on the iPhone 15 Pro, which I really like the sound of. I've not got hold of this yet, but I do like the sound of this button because you can configure it to a certain extent from what I've seen. So I'm curious to see, obviously, how much, to what extent you can configure it, because it sounds quite interesting. And I think in certain ways, it could be kind of something halfway between a home button, really, for voiceover users. Not massively, but it could be definitely more helpful. And I think that's one of the huge features for me, which I quite like, apart from the usual features that LiDAR offers.
Mm, yeah, well, I've been looking at this, and we'll talk more about it later. But yeah, that action button is just above the left-hand side of the phone, just above the volume up button. There's a little bit of a space, and then you've got the action button. And in Apple's official cases, you know, the button is covered in the same way that the other buttons would be covered by the case. And it's, you know, it feels very similar to those other buttons in terms of the way it travels. So yeah, we'll dig into that a bit more later on. USB-C, of course, hopefully meaning connection to more peripherals like audio devices, braille displays, all of that. Of course, every year we get these camera improvements, which we always hope will benefit some of those image recognition apps. Callum, so to bring this full circle then, you know, Tasneem rightly pointed out that it's a good idea sometimes to just sort of hold back, you know, and wait and see how the new software updates play out. Are there particular issues, do you think, that we need to be aware of? And how do we find out more about that?
Yeah, it depends on your use case. I mean, I've not found anything huge. There are definitely bugs. And the first release, you know, it's not a bad idea what Taz has done, you know, waiting around, just seeing how things go, maybe wait a couple of months or so, because the first releases are always a bit bumpy, even with the public beta testing. I haven't found anything that's like a showstopper, personally, but that's just me. You know, of course, it depends what apps you use, what you use your phone for. If you're a Braille user, I know there's quite a few new bugs related to Braille and, you know, Braille displays. The two main ones that I've picked up on personally, for some reason, and I don't know if this is voice specific, I need to do some more testing, but I use the Serena voice primarily. And if you try and go too quick and you're trying to, you know, you're swiping around and you're doing things, it's almost like she starts kind of talking over herself, you know, and saying two things at the same time. And it just gets a bit strange, but I can deal with that. That's not too much of a big deal. It only does it for a second or so. And then the other one that I've picked up on, if you've got notifications on your lock screen, when you press your power button or your home button, it won't say the time. So before it would have said like, you know, 10 o'clock, two notifications. Now it will just say two notifications, and that one's a bit annoying. But apart from that, for me, there's no serious ones. The best thing to do really is to go to applevis.com. That's applevis.com. And they've got at the time of this recording, I think it's pinned to the top of their site, just after the latest posts heading. They've got a really good blog post where they've reported a lot of bugs that they've discovered during the beta testing and that Apple are aware of. So if you go on there, you can find out about the accessibility bugs that they've encountered there, and you can see more details about them, and you can see comments from other users as well. So if you're thinking about it, if you're a bit hesitant, then yeah, definitely have a read through that first and see what you think, see if those bugs will impact you. It's really good, really detailed.
Yeah, and I have to say, for me, it's been fine. Tasneem?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's not going to impact everybody because it just depends, because it's intermittent, these bugs. So you might actually be okay, or you might find, as Callum has, it has impacted a little bit. But it's mainly the double tap and the single triple tap, I think, and also the clock stuff that Callum's mentioned. So, you know, you might be okay, you might not be. I guess it's just trial and error and see how it goes if you're wanting to upgrade to the new version.
Sometimes it's a good idea to keep an old device hanging around, you know, to use as a test device, if that's at all possible. I have to say,
yeah,
it's all gone pretty smoothly at this end, but your experience is your experience, right? And that's why we're here. So do let us know what your experience has been of iOS 17, WatchOS 10, or any of the new hardware released by Apple this month. Well, Tasneem, Hubert, welcome back. And Callum Stoneman, always good to have you here. Stick around. It's another Tech Talk. Here we go. The lid is coming off. There we go. Oh, my goodness me. And it's all sort of spilled out.
Hello. Select your country or region. United Kingdom.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Dave Williams with a brief demonstration of the iPhone 15 Pro from an accessibility perspective. Now, I had three reasons why I wanted to get hands-on with this device. The first one is the USB-C port. Would that connect to my Braille display? The second one is the action button. How useful would that be in an accessibility context? And the third is point and speak, a feature of the magnifier that will be available on all of Apple's iPhones that support LiDAR. So we have the phone set up and ready to go, and I am at the home screen. So let's try and plug in a Braille display. I've got my USB-C cable here, and I've just plugged that into the bottom. Now, the Pro and the Pro Max phones have faster USB-C, which means that you can transfer data more quickly, and of course you can connect other kinds of chargers that are going to give you that fast charging and all that good stuff. So that's great. But what happens when you plug in a Braille display?
Alert, cannot use accessory.
Alert, cannot use accessory.
This accessory uses too much power.
This accessory uses too much power. Now, that might be my particular Braille display, which is a Braille Sense 6. I have checked. It is working with Bluetooth, so I can use VoiceOver and Bluetooth to connect to my Braille Sense 6. But if I want to do a wide connection, that's not working for me just now. So I'll be interested to know if your mileage varies on that. The second thing was the action button. So this is just on the left-hand side of the phone above the volume up button. It's quite a small button, but you can find it with your thumb and you can decide what it does. Now, out of the box, if I press and hold the action button,
silent ring mode.
It toggles between silent mode and ring mode.
Ring mode, silent mode.
Silent mode.
Silent ring mode.
Ring mode. So if you just press it, it tells you what it's doing now. And then if you hold it, you get a little bit of a vibration and the sort of the thing that it controls changes, okay?
Ring mode.
So I just pressed it there and we are in ring mode. And if I just press it again,
ring mode.
It'll just say ring mode. So it's telling me the current state. But if I do a longer hold, like press and hold,
ring, silent mode.
I hear it changed to silent mode and I can feel a little bit of sort of haptic vibration in the phone. So super useful. But that's not really doing anything different from, you know, the old switch that we have on the regular iPhone 15 or earlier. So how do we change this? Well, you pop into settings. So let's do that now.
ChatGPT settings.
Okay, we're into settings. And I'm just going to move through. I'm just going to look for the action button. There it is, action button.
Silent mode, adjustable.
Okay, and we've got an adjustable control here, which means we can vertically flick to change what it does. So currently, the action button controls silent mode. But if I flick up,
focus,
that will switch on and off focus mode. And of course, you can go and configure your focus mode and get that to do whatever you want.
Camera,
of course, quickly jump into the camera.
Torch.
Switch on and off the torch might be very handy in those darker nights.
Voice memo.
Voice memo. That'd be handy, wouldn't it? Just being able to quickly record a voice memo.
Magnifier.
Switch on and off the magnifier. I am going to come back to magnifier because that will be our point and speak thing in a second.
Shortcut.
And we've got shortcuts, so you can go into the shortcuts app and choose a, you know, set up some shortcuts and then use the action button to control that.
Accessibility.
And the last one is accessibility. So we can choose from this screen what the accessibility feature is controlled from the action button. So I'm just going to flick to the right.
Accessibility. Quickly use an access choose a feature button.
Okay, and we've got the choose a feature button. I'm going to double tap that.
Double tap to dismiss pop-up window.
Okay, and now we've got a list of accessibility features that the action button can control. So I'm just going to flick to the right and you'll hear some of those.
Accessibility, heading, image, vision, classic invert, color filters, detection mode, increase contrast, reduce motion.
So some of these visual features, like, you know, changing the contrast, for example, you know, maybe you only need to change the contrast sometimes, or maybe you only need some of these visual features sometimes. So just having that on a one push button could be really helpful. I'm just going to keep going and see what we find. VoiceOver.
Reduce transparency, reduce white point, smart invert, VoiceOver. VoiceOver speaks items on the screen.
Button. Okay, so I'm going to double tap VoiceOver. Okay.
Settings, back button.
Okay, so I've now assigned my action button to control VoiceOver. So if I press the action button, press and hold
VoiceOver off.
There we go. Press and hold the action button. It turns VoiceOver off. So really helpful. You know, maybe somebody else uses your phone. Maybe somebody who's not a VoiceOver user needs to jump on there. It just gives you a quick way. Of course, there are other ways to do that. You know, there's the back tap and then there's the triple press the side button. And there's other ways in which you can toggle VoiceOver. But actually, just having one button might be helpful.
VoiceOver on.
So I've switched VoiceOver back on. Now, thirdly and finally, I want to have a go at this point and speak feature. So let's change our action button to be the magnifier.
Settings, back button, accessibility, adjustable. Accessibility.
So currently it's on accessibility. I'm just going to flick down.
Shortcut. Magnifier.
It's interesting, isn't it, that magnifier is not under accessibility. It's sort of part, you know, of the main list. That actually a magnifier is a almost like a mainstream thing. So I've now assigned my action button to be the magnifier so that I can instantly change my phone screen into being a digital magnifier.
Turn your phone into a magnifying glass to zoom in on and detect objects near you.
Turn your phone into a magnifying glass to detect objects near you. Right. So
FaceTime.
Okay, I've gone back to my home screen, so I'm just going to press and hold the side button now. I keep calling it side button. I mean the action button. Let's do that. And
magnifier.
We are in the magnifier, right? Now, I don't have a lot of usable vision. In fact, not at all. But what I do have is an interest in what text is around me. So we need to do a little bit of configuration here. So we need to go to settings. So I'm going to flick right.
Viewfinder, if card control selected, zoom, zip, brightness, contrast, filters, torch, exit for settings, button.
There's the settings button.
Actions available. Default, button. Save new activity, settings, button.
And then I have to go to another
magnifier,
settings button.
Controls.
And what I'm looking for here is the point and speak, the text detection, because that's what I want to be able to do with this.
Done, button. Add an organized primary, zoom, reorder, zoom, drag up to secondary, remove brightness, insert camera.
And the fastest way I think to get to this is to probably go up from the bottom.
Insert focus, other control, insert reorder, insert cameras, reorder, insert detection mode.
That's what action. I want. Detection mode.
Reorder insert detection mode. Insert cameras.
So by inserting detection mode, that puts the detection mode as part of the main magnifier. So let's come out of those settings and go back to the magnifier.
Chef viewfinder.
Okay, so there's the viewfinder. So now at the bottom of the screen,
multifoto settings, exit free detection mode off.
We've got a button for detection mode.
Available. Torch detection mode off. Dimmed button.
And I think I need to set that up.
Settings button. Multifoto setting. Freeze frame detection mode off. Button. Actions available.
Okay, we found our detection mode button in the camera, in the magnifier, and I'm just going to double tap that now.
Detection mode on. Point and speak on.
Okay, and I have point and speak selected, and we get this interesting sound. So let's see if we can find something to read. So I'm just, so I've got a box that this phone came in, and let's
detected.
See.
AUOU. Hand detected. Prizo. Capital R. Text upside down. Hand clean feed trademark sign.
Oh, there you go. So.
Dave Willier. Accessibility 943. Dave William. Accessibility and iPhone 15 Pro 947. Infant clean.
So now that I've selected detection mode and I've got point and speak enabled, what I'm going to do is point my camera at my computer screen, and then I'm going to put my finger on the screen and move it around.
And feed. Move iPhone slightly left. Dave Pedfo. Av Williams. Comma, 15 Pro. Accessibility and if, 1033. Plus connect. Accessibility and iPhone 15 Pro, 1040.
So there we are. So the iPhone is actually reading text from my computer screen. It's, you know, it's a work in progress, I think, but a heck of a lot of potential. And of course, if you wanted to know what something said rather than reading from the start every time, then that point and speak feature with a little bit of practice might be useful. So I think it's a bit of a thumbs up, actually. I like the action button. I'm hoping that the wired Braille support will come soon. And I think I probably need to get to know point and speak a little bit better to get the most out of it. But really keen to hear what you think. So do contact Tech Talk if you've got any thoughts about the iPhone 15 Pro, particularly in terms of accessibility. We'd love to hear from you. Techtalk at rnib.org.uk.
Now, back in December of last year, we got the news from Microsoft that they were discontinuing the popular navigation app Soundscape, and they were making the code open source. So in January, they removed the app from the App Store and made the code open source. And later this year, 2023, the app was closed down. And it's fair to say there was quite a lot of worry in the community that this meant that Soundscape, which had become very popular and was quite a unique app, there was a lot of concerns that it was going to be going away, that this was the end of Soundscape. And thankfully that's not been the case. It feels like I've been giving weekly Soundscape updates on this show lately. There's new apps appearing all the time. And one of those apps, well, they brought back the name Soundscape, developed by the Scottish Tech Army. And joining me now is Kirsty from the Scottish Tech Army. Hello, Kirsty. Thanks for joining us.
Hello, Callum. Thank you very much for having me.
The name Scottish Tech Army is both, in my opinion, both impressive and slightly terrifying. So who are the Scottish Tech Army, first off, and what's your role with them?
Yes, it's a benevolent army, I promise you, rather than a military one. The Scottish Tech Army is a not-for-profit, and it started in the middle of the first lockdown in April 2020. It was basically an opportunity to bring tech professionals who were, majority of whom were on furlough, but those who were out of contract or had been made redundant, and who were maybe sitting at home and maybe a tad purposeless, but keen to support the emergency in any way they could. And also being very much aware of the fact that the charity sector was coming under the most enormous pressure to continue the delivery of its crucial services, but we're having to do it digitally, probably for the first time in many instances. And you know, all of that pressure was coming to bear on them. We had all of these people with all of the skills they needed with nothing to do. So we brought the two of them together, and it launched on the 28th of April, 2020. And it just exploded. We had 120 odd volunteers within the first 24 hours. I believe I was number three. And it just carried on from there. We had 700 volunteers in 5 weeks. We've just tipped over 3,000 registered volunteers this week in 2023. Now, they're registered volunteers. They've not all worked on projects, but over 1,000 of them have. And we've helped around about 300 charities with their digital challenges. And that was everything from, do we use Zoom or Teams, to, you know, major database surgeries and things like that. So so the skill set and the types of challenges that the volunteers were working on were very, very wide and varied. Last year, we launched something called the Tech for Good Alliance, which is a UK-wide initiative to engage with businesses, corporates who give volunteering time to their employees through their CSR programmes. And we know that the uptake of those volunteering programmes is perhaps not as fantastic as it could be. And one of the reasons for that, there are several, but one of the reasons for that is that opportunities for those skills are really presented to employees in a way that allows them to deliver something impactful in a short space of time. So we have become a bit of a dab hand in the last 3 years of breaking down projects into manageable chunks so that people can, you know, volunteers can come in, do a bit of it, hand it off to somebody else, and somebody else takes it over. And it's a really efficient sort of process. Everybody gets to contribute, but the charity at the end of it actually does get, you know, a fabulous service, a challenge resolved, and an opportunity to, you know, increase their reach or efficiency within their organization because digital has provided them with a means to do that.
So you say that it was kind of formed and started in April 2020. Did that come about as a result of the lockdowns, or is that a bit of a coincidence? Because I can imagine that was crucial, you know, digital skills and helping people with digital challenges, that was needed more than ever, wasn't it?
Absolutely. It's quite interesting that one of the ethos, if you like, at the Scottish Tech Army is to think big, start small and move fast. Alistair Forbes, who is our chief executive, but is one of the co-founders of the Scottish Tech Army, was out on his 1 hour walk at the beginning of April, right at the beginning of April. Do you remember those days when you're only allowed out for an hour?
Oh, yeah.
And he came across somebody that he knew who was in the tech sector, and they had just furloughed their entire organization. And he was really worried about his team. And they're going to be sitting at home. They're not going to be doing anything. He was worried about them. And Alistair was very much aware of the fact that the charity sector was coming under enormous load. And it just was one of those light bulb moments. So he kind of basically went home, phoned a friend, a chap called Pete Jaco, who is the other co-founder of the Scottish Tech Army. And between them, they basically worked every connection they ever had. They both worked in the tech sector for many years, and launched it on social media on the 28th of April. It was literally 3 weeks in the making. And it just hasn't stopped since. I mean, after about 6 or 7 months of doing this as a volunteer organisation, it became very, very clear that the charity sector just is so... it's so hamstrung in being able to embrace digital technology. There's so many reasons why it can't do it. It's either money or it's time or it's skill or knowledge or board knowledge or whatever it is. It's a tragedy, really, because of all the sectors, I think technology can have the most amazing impact in the charity sector. And it's not that the charities are unwilling. It's just there's so many other things sort of compounded to make it very difficult for them to embrace it. And this was a brilliant way of bringing that service to them, if you like, and showing them how digital can make a difference.
Talk to us about Soundscape then. So how did this come about?
Soundscape is I'm going to call it serendipitous Soundscape, because every year we hold a Tech for Good Summit, which is a means by which to, you know, showcase volunteer stories, but also, you know, talk about how digital can contribute to the sector. And this year, for the first year, we had an in-person element to it, which was to bring together our Tech for Good Alliance member companies, third sector, government, you know, that kind of thing, all in a room. And we were at the Barclays campus in Glasgow. And I was sitting next to the head of social impact for Microsoft. And at this point, I shot, pause and tell you that I am also the vice chair of Seascape, which is a visual impairment charity based in Fife. And I was following my Twitter feed on the day of the summit to see who was talking about the summit. But up on my Twitter feed came Seascape posting the petition that had been started in the US to stop Microsoft from shutting the Soundscape service down.
Oh, wait.
And I didn't know anything about it.
And you were sat with someone at Microsoft.
Yes. So nice. I kind of slid away and went, I'll be with you in a minute, and turned my phone away. And I kind of went to have a look at it. I'd never heard of Soundscape at that point. And I was going, I have absolutely no idea what that is, but I really need to go and have a look. So that evening, after the whole summit was over, I sat down with a glass of wine and I did some research. And I realized that actually it had been a Microsoft research project. And they've made the code open source. So I kind of parked that in the back of my head because we are very much an open source orientated organization. Anything we build for one charity, if we can use it with 500 other charities, then that's what we're going to do. So I sort of parked that in the back of my head. But the day after the summit, somebody from PwC, the consulting firm, contacted us. They'd been at the summit the day before as our guests, and they said, look, we absolutely love what you're doing. We want to get involved. We want to use our skills for good. We have a volunteering day on the 19th of May called One Firm, One Day. Is there something that my team can do? And he said, last year we were, yanking shopping trolleys out of the canals, and this year we want to put our skills to the best use we can. And it was a cloud engineering team. So these are the software engineers and everything that kind of look at things like apps like Soundscape. And I just said, yes, actually you can. I'll go and have a look at the Soundscape repo and tell me if what's in there can be reproduced, because everything I read last night tells me that Microsoft will have had legitimate reasons for, concluding their research, but actually the community loves it and they don't want to lose it. And it seems to me that if we can reinstate it and give it, a new life, then I think that's a worthy cause. And that is exactly what we did. On the 19th of May, we had a cloud engineering team looking at if they could take what Microsoft had made available and reinstate it. And we also had a product marketing team down in London working with people from GuideDogs UK, people from Seascape and other users of the Soundscape, the original Soundscape app, talking about what was good, what was bad, and what would make it better. So there's, the kernel of a roadmap being developed there about, what would come after the app was reinstated. And it was wonderful because it really gave us the confidence to go, right, it can be done. So we knew that we only had a few months to do something about it before the existing service was shut down. So we undertook to do just that, basically reproduce, not try and do anything else with it, just literally reproduce what everybody already knew and get it back out there so that people could use it. And we got there by the skin of our teeth, I'll say that. But, we launched it on the 31st of August before Microsoft shut theirs down that night.
Was there ever any doubts about whether you'd be able to do this? Because I remember speaking to a few developers. I mean, we had, when the news first broke, we had Ilka Pertima on the show, who's the developer of Blind Square, which is another popular navigation app. And he was kind of saying, most of it's open source, but then there's some bits that you'd have to recreate and you'd have to host some of it yourself and things like that. So how did those kind of challenges go down?
Well, one of the beauties of open source is that if there's something missing, you can probably go and find it somewhere else. So Microsoft had withheld some of their own proprietary code. So there were certain APIs that they were using. I mean, bear in mind, this was a research project. This wasn't a commercial product. It was a research project. So the code that was being used there was, if you can imagine, it's just, it's not optimized. It's a research project. You can do whatever you like. You've got unlimited resources. And it was to test out, I presume, a theory of some description. So the only thing that they withheld was proprietary code that they would never make available to anybody. It's Microsoft stuff. And the other one was actually the code that related to Sony LinkBuds, which actually wasn't theirs to give away. So when we identified that was what was missing, it was just a case of, it was all to do with the how the mapping worked. And it was just a case of, right, well, we can't use that one, so let's go and use another one. And effectively, that's what we've done. We just went and lifted and laid it from somebody else. We haven't rewritten any code. We've just lifted stuff up and kind of assembled it together. And the conversations that we had about the earbuds sort of thing was that, times had moved on since that had originally been set up. And the consensus at the time seemed to be that bone conducting headphones and everything would work just as well as, specialist ones like Sony LinkBuds. So we decided just to kind of park that to one side. Now, I haven't had a conversation with Sony. You never know. They might have said, yeah, absolutely, you can have the code. Don't worry, lay it in as well. But we didn't have time. We were we committed to ourselves that this is what we were going to do. And I have to say that the volunteering team that we pulled together for this is international. I mean, we have got volunteers from other countries working on this who have a vested interest in seeing Soundscape reinstated because they are potentially visually impaired themselves or they know somebody who is. And it was absolutely fantastic. You know, we even had, there's an app company in this country called XDesign, which is a really big app developer, and they lent us one of their iOS developers to help us really get it over the line. And that willingness to make it happen, because it had to happen, is what made it happen, if you like. It was everybody was determined, and that is exactly what we did. And I'm so proud of them and grateful to them for, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning sessions and all that kind of thing that you have to do, and all the time differences that kind of worked and that kind of stuff. It was a wonderful collective effort. It really was.
And what's the reaction been like?
It's been good. I mean, I think we have the benefit of the fact that it occurred to me that you couldn't trademark the word Soundscape because it's a descriptive word. And I asked Microsoft if they would mind if we used it, seeing as they were going to stop using it. And they said, well, it's not for us to say, you know, whether you can or can't use it, but we don't have a problem if you do. And I thought, right, well, if it's going to be exactly the same app, then let's call it exactly the same thing, because, you know, it is literally a reproduction of what was already out there. And I think that has helped, you know, that everybody, you know, Soundscape's back, is it, we can do it. Yes, it's a different app. You've got to, you know, we've lost service to the other one. You have to download a new app, but it is actually exactly the same. And so far, the response to it has been really, really positive. I mean, I was checking numbers before I came to this, and in a week, we've over 1,000 downloads, which I don't even know what a good download number is, but actually that feels to me like we've managed to get the word out, you know, thanks to podcasts like this, that, you know, that the app is available. And our ratings seem to be pretty good on the App Store as well. So yeah, I mean, it's gone really, really well. And we have plans for Soundscape. We are not specialists in the visual impairment world. We're techies. And we know that there are optimization improvements that we can make to the way the app actually runs, which nobody using it would notice, but it just makes it cheaper to run at the back end, which is important because of how this potentially is going to be funded in the longer term. But also, you know, we've got that kernel of a roadmap. We've already got people coming forward and making suggestions about, you know, what would make it even better. And one of the wonderful things about an organization like the Scottish Tech Army is we have a constant inhalation and exhalation, if you like, of fresh volunteers. So people come and go because, you know, they give some of their time and then life, you know, moves on and whatever it is, and people come and go, but they're very disciplined. So their handover notes, their ability to transfer knowledge from one of them to another as somebody else kind of steps in to take over, means that we've got a long-term community that can maintain the Soundscape platform. So if we break down our work packages, so we might say to one of our corporate members, we want you to come and build a thing that's to fit into Soundscape, then that corporate member can come in on a day or 2 days, whatever it is, build the thing, and then hand it over to our volunteer community, and they will basically, like a Lego brick, slot it into the Soundscape wall and make sure that it happens. And it gives that wonderful sort of continuity, if you like, all the way along. It doesn't become a standalone project. It becomes folded into the very fabric of what Scottish Tech Army is all about.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I was going to touch on, the kind of funding and the keeping this sustainable, because this is a free app and it's incredible that it is free. And I guess the general feeling is that a company like Microsoft could afford to keep this free. But I know there's been a lot of concern in the community, and it's certainly crossed my mind as well, because I love Soundscape. I think it's an incredible app. And, you know, it has crossed my mind that this is now still free, which is amazing, but this costs money to host, to run. The more users you get, the more those costs go up, I'm guessing, if it's cloud-based hosting. And I do like the kind of funding model that you've come up with, or the sustainability model at least, that if one organization decides they can't support it anymore, then that means the whole thing doesn't just collapse. Or is that right?
Yes, I think, I mean, you're right that, you know, and you, I can hear, you know, you wonder with, you know, do you have confidence that the new Soundscape is going to be around, or is somebody going to pull the plug on that one as well? And I think this is something that happens a lot in the disability world, that this tech, this amazing, transformative, you know, independence-giving technology arrives in the sector, and then for one reason or another, it disappears again because it can't make its, you know, wash its face commercially, or, you know, for whatever other reason, this technology is being pulled. And I think that for me, Microsoft, you know, they're an enormous organization. They have strategic goals and directions to follow. This was a research project. They never pretended it was anything else. They've given away 7 years of research for free. And if you actually think about how much money it cost to develop that research, we would never have even begun to undertake creating Soundscape from scratch. I mean, you just wouldn't have been able to do it. So I do think that there is a relationship to be built, you know, around this kind of thing, where if it is being used as a research project, giving that research away for free at the end of it, you know, making the code base available is a good and generous thing to have done, because, as you well know, several organizations now have lifted that code and are using it in different ways. But in terms of actually making sure that the users who want it, the people that need the app, the ones who are, you know, huge fans of it, and it seems to be there's an awful lot of them. And when you think that Microsoft never really marketed this product because it was a research project, you know, we know that we can grow the user base considerably beyond what it was originally. But how you sustain that, how you keep that going in the longer term is a real challenge. As you say, there are costs associated with this. The Scottish Tech Army isn't looking to, Soundscape's not a commercial vehicle for us. That's not how we operate. We don't charge for our services, especially when it's being developed by, you know, volunteers who are not paying. So our funding model is completely different. But one organization had the opportunity to pull the plug on the original Soundscape. And I think we need to find an alternative to one organization having the authority or the position to do it again. So the funding framework that I would really like to consider is to talk to many of the visual impairment support organizations within the sector and say, can we bring you all to the same framework where you all share the cost of an app like Soundscape? And it's not just Soundscape, there's lots of things like this, so that the cost is spread, you know, but also the control is spread. But ultimately, the control sits within the community of people who use it rather than the control sitting within the tech sector or somebody else. And don't forget, Soundscape is a global product. You know, this is being used in, you know, our download numbers in the US and the UK are pretty much neck and neck at the moment. So there are organizations over there that we need to go and talk to as well. And the more organizations that join the framework, the cheaper it is for everybody. And as you say, if one of them has a greater need for the money that they were contributing to the Soundscape costs to go somewhere else, if they withdraw from the framework, then it doesn't mean that Soundscape stops working, or that people are scrambling around trying to find a replacement for them. It becomes much more coherent and a better structure. And actually, the sector has an opportunity to really build a platform of apps that everybody can access for free. And if they're all spreading the cost, then it doesn't become onerous. And it is, yes, a level of philanthropy, but it feels like a philanthropic model a step removed, where money is being diverted to support this platform as part of the general support of the community itself.
Yeah, and that's, you touched on a point that I was going to make as well, that although this is by the Scottish Tech Army and, you know, we're in the UK and stuff, it's definitely not just a UK project, is it? It's still worldwide, just like the original Soundscape was.
It's absolutely worldwide. I think one of the interesting things for us is, we haven't released this yet, but you know, doing a what they call a global ingestion, so kind of every country in the world, you know, is, it will be available for download if people want it. The challenge that we have there is that we need translations into the languages. You know, the instructions need translated into multiple different languages, so we will crowdsource that as well. You know, we'll reach out into the community itself and say, well, if you want it in fact, we had somebody posting saying, I want to use it in Serbia, and we're kind of going, knock yourself out if you can speak English, but can you give us a hand to translate it into Serbo-Croat, because mine's not quite up to scratch, you know. And it's kind of being able to crowdsource that translation, if you like, from the community itself, which I really like the model of, because then everybody feels like they've had something to do with it, which is great.
And again, that's the beauty of open source, isn't it, that the community can get involved in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, as I say, open source is lies behind the ethos of what Scottish Tech Army is all about. We know that there are lots of charities out there that are doing very similar things in geographically different areas. And they're probably all doing them differently. And actually, if we could find some mechanisms by which everybody was using similar systems, and even if they were transferring knowledge, saying, well, we used it this way and it was really good and somebody else doing that as well, then, you know, that's better for the sector at large, and it's much more efficient and you can really improve your reach, you can improve your efficiency, you know, and reduce your costs and things like that. So so open source is very much the case. If we build something for one organization, if we can use it anywhere else, we will do that. So which is really cool.
I just want to pick up on, because as I mentioned at the start, I seem to be giving constant updates on Soundskip. There seems to be a new one coming along every week at the minute. a new version of Soundskip, or a new, you know, a Soundskip with a new interface, or other apps adding Soundskip into their existing products. And there might be people out there thinking, well, which one do I go for? Can you give any advice to those people wondering where to start, which one to choose?
Well, I think, firstly, I would say, isn't it wonderful to have a choice? Because up until
the
31st of August, you didn't, because the only service that was available was going to be withdrawn. And I do think it is horses for courses. You know, we are not pretending that our Soundskip app is any different from the original Soundskip app at the moment. So if all you are looking to do is go with what you know, then that might be a good choice for you. I do think that some of the other apps, I think we will diverge. I mean, I think because everybody was under a time pressure to try and get this sorted out before the original service was lost, everybody's basically sort of tried to get to the same point. And I think we've, you know, successfully done that. The two others that I know about are doing really great work. You know, there's nothing to knock about what they're doing. I think for me, the sustainability of these is utterly paramount. Unless you can afford to keep it going, unless you can commit to the community that this is going to be available to them for as long as they want it to be there, that would be my decider. I think I want to know that when I wake up on Christmas morning this year, that app is still going to be available to me, and when I wake up next Christmas morning, it's going to be available to me then as well, unless I've decided I don't want to use it anymore. And you can easily see a downward trend, you know, in app usage. So, you know, you can kind of start the conversation, you know, why is nobody using it anymore? And is it because, you know, something better has kind of come along in its way? And that's great. And if everybody's transitioning across to something better, then that's wonderful, but it's their choice. So I think for me, you know, if you're just looking to say, as I say, go with what you know, then ours is probably a good one. But if you're looking for some of the other features and new functionalities, then you'll get them from some of the others as well. And ours will kind of come along as well, you know, over time, but we'll probably do it more slowly, because for me, the funding framework is more important right now than giving it all new bells and whistles.
Yeah, well, before I let you go, I was just going to ask, actually, can you share any feature plans? I know you said you've got a few back-end fixes and optimizations, but are there any plans for new features that, you know, we could be talking about, or that the users might notice? Or is it just a case for now of giving back what we were about to lose?
We don't have a specific roadmap per se. We're just about to embark on that. That's our next phase. And we'll start engaging with the community itself to find out what the priorities are for them, what the things that they need to see. But we've already had some great suggestions, like integration with door detection systems and other things like that. So as I said before, we're not visual impairment specialists at the Scottish Tech Army. I don't see that as a bad thing. I actually think it's really good. I think what you might get from us is a very fresh perspective on the things that you're asking for, and much more of a kind of a can-do attitude about this stuff, because we'll go and look for what's already been developed that's open source, and see if we can fold it into the app as much as possible. But I'll happily come back and let you know what we're doing next.
Yeah, please do keep in touch. I mean, it's a fantastic app, and it's amazing to see it back from you and in other forms as well. And I know you say you're not VI specialists, but I can tell you, people with visual impairments are very happy with you at the minute for bringing this back. It's hugely appreciated.
Well, that's really great to know. And I will take back to the team, because they are the ones who made it happen. And I'm sure they'll be absolutely delighted.
Well, keep in touch. And thanks for joining us, Kirsty McIntosh from the Scottish Tech Army.
Thank you.
We've had an email from Jeff Parsons, who writes to us about Daisy players. And Jeff wants us to be aware that, as far as he's concerned, a huge advantage of the Victor Stream 3 is the fact that you can extend the storage up to a gigantic 1 terabyte with an SD card. Very useful if you have an extremely large music and audiobook library. I'm not sure how I'd fill that. Tasneem, you were away when we talked about Daisy Players. Do you have one?
I don't actually. I just use my iPhone for, I've got Audible, which I absolutely love. I've had for several years and kind of wouldn't really live without my library collection. But I think, is the Milestone, is that a Daisy Player as such as well? Because it does multiple things as well. And I do like the kind of features that the Milestone offers personally. I think you can connect it to the internet as well. So I do remember Steve Nutt doing a really good demonstration of that, actually. And that would be my kind of piece of kit, to be honest, if we're talking about Daisy Players.
I've not used those, to be honest with you. I'm probably more an app person. But if you do need help with your Daisy Player, then you can, of course, contact RNIB's Technology for Life team, tfl@rnib.org.uk. But good to hear from you, Jeff, and glad you are enjoying your Daisy Player. We've heard from Pete, who has written to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And Pete says, I have listened to your section on AirTags to locate missing articles. Now, I think this was you, Hubert. I think it might be worth adding that the AirTags don't use LiDAR. They use a chip in the newer iPhones called the U1. And of course, we've heard about in the iPhone 15 that the U2, remember them? Anyway, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. It's also, he says that sometimes there are issues if your AirTag is sort of in the same, you know, kind of horizontal position, but like vertically above or below where you're looking. I mean, Hubert, does any of this make sense to you?
Yes, and it's actually good to hear from someone who's used them a bit more, because when I was doing the demonstration at one point, my AirTag was very much above me, and I think because I've got an older phone, I don't even know if the iPhone XR has the U1 chip, to be honest. But yeah, it's good to know a bit more information as to what the AirTags use.
Yeah, because Pete says as you get closer, you know, if you've got the right U1 chip in your phone, you get haptic feedback that kind of increases as you get closer to your AirTag. So you might get a better experience if you upgrade your phone, Hubert.
I will do at some point.
Anyway, Pete says, hopes that helps, and thanks for a great show. We also need to say thanks to Graham Langford, who made the same point. Thanks, Graham. Of course, not everybody is super excited about the recent announcements from Apple. We've heard from Will, who says, yes, the action button does sound interesting, but if they're not going to give us the home button, then, frankly, Will's going to sit this one out. What do you guys think? I was always somebody who said, I'm never giving up the home button. I'm never giving up Touch ID. I want to be able to unlock my phone in my pocket, you know, in the rain or like when I'm lying in bed, reach out and do all of that. But I just realized that the battery life and the, you know, the accessibility has really moved on. And I would like a piece of that action. Anybody, you know, clinging onto the home button, Taz?
Yeah, I agree with Will. I just think, well, mostly agree with him. It's definitely in terms of the home button. I fail to understand why Apple have removed that feature of Touch ID and the home button. I see no reason why it can't be brought back. It doesn't detract from its attractiveness. You know, actually, it adds to it. So why not bring back a feature that everybody loves and give the consumer more choice? I mean, it's beyond my logic. Just bring it back, Apple, please.
Well, it's still there on the SE if you want it. I mean, Callum, do we just need to move on? Because, you know, a lot of Android phones don't have a home button. And do we really need it? I mean, the thing that Will says as well is, you know, he likes to use Touch ID for Apple Pay as well. And I kind of take that point because, you know, when you're reaching out across a counter to a point of sale machine, that can be helpful.
Yeah, I've heard a few people saying this and I kind of wonder which bit is the problem. Is it the home button itself? Like, is it the button or is it the Touch ID? Because I think they've been kind of merged into the same thing. But for the button, so I don't have a problem with it. You know, I've never had a problem with that gesture to get up to the home button. But I do find myself, because I've got an SE 2020 that I use for work. So that's my work phone. And I do really love the Touch ID. I don't dislike Face ID. You you know, I manage fine with it. But there's just something about that seamlessness of, you know, just reaching out on my desk and just putting my finger on the little button, and then it unlocks, and then I can just carry on using it, even if I've got my Braille display connected or something. So I would like Touch ID to come back in some form, but I think the reason they've removed it is for the, well, the reason they're going with, at least, is security, because, you know, apparently Face ID is a lot more secure, which I get, but then it's still there on the iPads. You know, I think the iPad Pros have it, I think, in the power button.
Yeah, it's interesting that people still want to talk about this, and you're not alone, Will. I know that there are lots of people who feel similarly. So thank you so much for making sure that point of view got heard. And of course, if you would like your point of view to be heard here on Tech Talk, then drop us a line. We do read all the emails. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Welcome back to the built-in screen reader series here on Tech Talk, and in the episode 4 of the narrator-focused series, we will be looking at reading text with the narrator screen reader. Now, when it comes to reading text, there are lots of different reading commands depending what you prefer. But what we will focus on in this episode is reading text using arrow keys rather than looking at plenty of the individual commands, because you can read using a combination of narrator key and letters on your keyboard. For example, using the narrator key and the letters J, K and L to read previous, current and next word respectively. However, that can be a bit complicated to remember, because there are different combinations to read words, lines and characters, when reading with arrow keys is a lot more simpler. So we will be showing you that and one or two other reading commands that will read you larger bits of text, which will be probably helpful. So in front of us, I have a notepad document open. And to double check that this is what we have opened, I will press narrator key and the letter T.
Asterisk untitled, notepad window.
So yes, this is untitled because I have not saved it. And here I have written a basic piece of text for us to read, and we will read it now. So I will move us to the top of the document. Now, I can read by character, first of all. And to do that, I will simply need to press the right or left arrow key. So let's try this.
Cap T.
So I pressed the left arrow key to put us at the letter T. And I will read from left to right by character, pressing the right arrow key.
H-I-S space I-S space A space T-E-S T.
This is a test, is what I've managed to read with the arrow keys. Now we will go back to the top of the document.
Cap T.
In this case, by pressing Control and Home, which you can identify using input learning mode. Now I will be pressing the right arrow key, this time while holding down the Control key. And let's see what happens.
Is a test piece of text.
So you may have noticed it didn't actually read the current word. It went, is a test. So there is a command to read the current word, which you might want to be able to use. So I'll take us back to the top.
Cap T.
And I'll press narrator key plus the letter K.
This.
And it will read me the current word, which can be helpful because when you read with the arrow keys, it moves on to the next word rather than reading the current word you are on. So that is reading by words. And you can reverse this by pressing left arrow key while holding down Control key, or just the left arrow key on its own to go backwards through the characters. So next is all about reading lines. So to read the current line, you can simply press narrator plus app arrow key. So I'm going to do that now.
This is a test piece of text to be used for the demonstration of reading text using narrator screen reader.
And it has now read me the current line. If I want to read the next line, for example, I can press the down arrow key.
This is done using the keyboard only.
And if I want to go back up with the up arrow key, it will read me the previous line.
This is a test piece of text to be used for the demonstration of reading text using Narrator Screen Reader.
Now that is a fairly simple way of reading without having to remember too many keyboard commands. But if you want to read a larger part of text or a entire document, there are keyboard commands for that, which I'll show you. So I will put our cursor at the top of the document using Control Home, and I will now press Narrator and down arrow. So this being capital key and down arrow in my case.
This is a test piece of text to be used for the demonstration of reading text using Narrator Screen Reader. This is done using the keyboard only.
And as you can hear, it simply read the entire piece of text, starting from the narrator cursor. Now, if I put the cursor a few words further.
End of space. This is a test.
And I will press narrator with a down arrow key again.
Test piece of text to be used for the demonstration of reading text using Narrator Screen Reader. This is done using the keyboard only.
And it read from the narrator cursor, which was moved to a different position. So that is a simple way of reading text. There are many other commands you can explore online, including reading by sentences, paragraphs, and pages. But there is plenty of them, which we will not go into in this demonstration. But if you do want to, you know you can always request it. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Now, when it comes to getting details about text, it is up to you how much detail you want to get. Now, you can change this by changing verbosity levels in Narrator, which will then change how much information you get with your screen reader. So I will take you quickly through the verbosity levels and roughly tell you what they are mainly recommended for. So you've got verbosity level 1. Now, to change verbosity levels, you press Narrator plus the letter V for Victor and Narrator Shift V to go back a level as well, if you wish. Level 1 is what you mainly use for applications that you know very well, or for reading text-heavy books or articles, because you don't get much information, but you can enjoy the text you are reading or use an app quickly because you know it very well and you know how to use it. Now, verbosity level 2 is more used for applications that you know well, but you might need some guidance with certain controls. Next is level 3, which is the default level, which reads you all of the controls, so that way you know exactly where you are and what you're doing if you are not sure. Now, level 4 will give you some text details, and the recommendation for this one, according to the Complete Narrator Guide by Microsoft, is that it is very good for writing documents because it will read most text attributes. So if you are writing a basic document, you might want to choose verbosity level 4. And level 5 is the highest level, and that is where you will get all the text details that you might need. And this mode is ideally used for when you are proofreading documents, where naturally the detail is very important. Next, I will show you quickly how to find out about formatting of the text. So that is what font may be used and maybe what font styles, which is a bit advanced, but if you are working on professional documents, that is something that often will be quite useful. So I am back in the notepad text that we have written, and I will press narrator plus the letter F, and we'll see what it tells us.
Font information consolas, size 11, background color white, foreground color black 1 of 9.
I'll press narrator plus F again.
No advanced font information 2 of 9. No object color and outline information 3 of 9.
So as you're hearing, it's going through various different formatting groups, and there's 9 of them. So each group identifies you different information about the formatting of the text, depending on what document you are using and how it is created. We will not go through all the groups and what they mean, but you can get a lot of detail about the text formatting, which is the main part to focus on. The next quick mention is changing of punctuation. If you like to find out what punctuation is in the document, you can change the punctuation levels in Narrator by pressing Narrator plus Alt plus the plus or minus keys. And this will change the levels of punctuation depending on what you wish to have set. More often than not, people have them set fairly low because when they are reading long blocks of text, they do not want to hear commas and full stops. But again, when proofreading a document or correcting a document, you might want to be able to hear more punctuation. Or if you're a coding person, you definitely want to hear punctuation. You can also change how capital letters are indicated by narrator. So sometimes if the letter is capitalized, you can either have a tone or you can have narrator pitch change or narrator say the word cap before the letter. So if the word is high, it would say cap H and then I on its own, for example. This has to be adjusted in the narrator settings, however, but it can be changed if you want it. And that is all for our reading text episode. If you have any more questions or want a more detailed demonstration of certain features, get in touch. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And we will see you for the final episode of the Narrator Focus series, which will be all about narrator views.
We have come to the end of yet another Tech Talk. Thank you so much for your company. Do get in touch if you've got feedback on anything you've heard on the programme. It's techtalk@rnib.org.uk for all your emails and voice notes. Next week, will it be game over for Callum Stoneman as he learns about accessibility in the new Mortal Kombat video game? Plus, we'll be thinking more about our digital well-being. But from all of us here at Tech Talk, that's it.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.